It's Wednesday, June 23rd. How do you make sure the majority rules when a minority can stop the vote? We start here.
The motion is not agreed to.
A Democratic Senate agrees to push through voting reforms, but is then blocked by Republicans.
You have Democrats that are just growing even more frustrated.
Nobody likes getting filibustered, but some Democrats say this is next level. We'll take you up to Capitol Hill. The defense secretary says he doesn't need to wait for a vote.
What this is intended to do is to support sexual assault victims in the prosecution of cases.
Overnight, a massive change in how the military handles one of its most disturbing problems. And fans have said leave Britney alone, but will she say it today?
Here she is, selling out shows night after night, and yet her dad is in control of her finances.
Ahead of an anticipated court date, new details prompt the question, is she a pop star or a prisoner? From ABC News, this is Start Here. I'm Brad Milkey. Every election teaches us about the power of the vote, but last year's election really reminded us how important voting methods are. What happens when people have the opportunity to vote early, to vote by mail, to vote from their car? Well, in the aftermath of that, each party has raced to address what they see as fundamental problems.
When voting in person in the state of Georgia, you must have a photo ID. It only makes sense for the same standard to apply to absentee ballots as well.
Republicans control a lot of state houses and have used that power to push through restrictive new state laws.
The drop boxes will be available only when they're monitored and during regular voting hours.
The laws, their various cousins in Republican state legislatures across the country, are one of the greatest threats we have to modern democracy in America.
Democrats control Congress with a slim majority and have sought to use that power to pass some of the most sweeping voter access laws in generations. There's just one problem. A majority doesn't actually do that much in the U.S. Senate unless you can overcome a filibuster.
Today's vote is on whether we start debate on legislation to protect America's voting rights. All 50 Democrats will vote yes. Every one of us wants to start debate.
Well, yesterday, Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer decided to put senators on record. ABC's congressional correspondent Rachel Scott joins us from the Senate right now. Rachel, this vote seemed to take like weeks to come together and then just, a few minutes to be stopped in its tracks.
Brad, it was really quick. 50-50 split. Every single Republican voted against this moving forward. Every single Democrat voted for it.
3/5 of the senators duly chosen and sworn, not having voted in the affirmative, the motion is not agreed to.
You had Vice President Kamala Harris, who is the president of the Senate. She presided over this key vote to advance what has really been a critical piece of legislation on voting rights for the Democratic Party.
They haven't made the changes to your life. They,
yet. I'm understanding they're working. Everyone's working in a real group.
And you had Senate Democrats. They were united. And a lot of this came after this last minute effort to win over West Virginia Senator Joe Manchin.
What was President Biden's message to you in that meeting?
So just to be clear, you're undecided.
We had a nice conversation. President's message is very, very confidential.
He met with President Biden. He proposed his own changes to the bill, including voter ID, making Election Day a federal holiday, requiring at least 15 days of consecutive early voting. And that was embraced by voting rights activists like Stacey Abrams. Even former President Barack Obama said he was on board.
Mr. President, I too rise in opposition to S1.
But it was still not enough for Republicans.
A truly radical piece of legislation. It turns out, because of that, it's an unpopular piece of legislation.
So why are we taking up a massive federal takeover of election law? Well, that's a good question.
They railed against this. They said they do not believe that it should be up to the federal government to enact these sort of changes, that it really should be up to the states.
With the record high turnout in 2020, it is very difficult to make the case that this bill is necessary, as some have said, to save our democracy.
But Brad, the reason why this is so pivotal is because it comes at a time and against the backdrop where Republicans in at least 15 states have already actually enacted tougher voting restrictions.
Well, and so we knew then Republicans would be united against this, right? The 50 votes on their side was not that big of a surprise. Democrats were almost less clear, right? So I'm wondering if part of this was Chuck Schumer almost forcing his own members, like Joe Manchin, like Kyrsten Sinema in Arizona, to take a stand on voting rights and these Republican bills one way or the other.
Yeah, Brad, he was almost daring members of his own party to vote against this. But I also talked to a senior Democratic source who told me the point of this was to also get every single Republican on the record on this particular issue.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Madam President, I want to be clear about what just happened on the Senate floor. Every single Senate Republican just voted against starting debate on legislation to protect Americans' voting rights.
We are heading into a very critical stretch here, right ahead of the midterm elections, where Democrats are going to want to hold on to both their majorities in the Senate and the House.
Once again, Senate Republicans have signed their names in the ledger of history alongside Donald Trump, the big lie, and voter suppression, to their enduring disgrace.
And they wanted to send a message to Americans who may be heading to the polls that they believe Republicans are against expanding voting rights in this country.
Madam President, we're the pool here.
Hi, guys.
You also heard from Vice President Kamala Harris moments after this vote. She said that the fight is not over.
The bottom line is that the president and I are very clear. We support S1. We support the John Lewis Voting Rights Act.
And Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer said, make no mistake about it, this will not be the last time that this issue is going to be up for debate on the Senate floor again. I had a senior Democratic source who told me that we can expect Democrats to revisit this before the fall, Brad.
Well, and so that's the future of this particular bill. Does it get bigger than that, Rachel? Because if Republicans continue to hold this up, if they're doing that on something as important to Democrats as voting rights, is there a point at which Joe Manchin or some of these moderates would get on board with just blowing up the filibuster or something?
And exactly, Brad, the filibuster. This is the 60-vote threshold. So that means that Democrats need the support of at least 10 Republicans in order to move forward on critical legislation, unless they change the Senate rules and change the filibuster.
What about some activists who say, let's suspend the rules for this one time, push this through, that the need is urgent? You called this an immediate concern. Why not go that route?
Well, you do it for one time, then you basically destroy the Senate as we know it.
Right now, you have people like Senator Joe Manchin. I have asked this question repeatedly to him. He says that it is a non-starter for him.
Right.
He has not changed his mind on this. But the pressure is certainly going to amp up after this.
Senator Kyrsten Sinema of Arizona, Democrat, she made news today with her op-ed in the Washington Post, pouring cold water on the idea that Democrats could get rid of those rules in order to advance their agenda.
If you have Republicans continuing to block priorities for Democrats, you have Democrats that are just growing even more frustrated.
It is just unfair and undemocratic for a minority of the Senate to prevent what the majority of people want in this country, in the House and in the Senate.
And at this point, it just doesn't look like they can get on the same page on this particular issue.
Right. It was something where he broke news to you saying he was opposed to some of these ideas. Well, we saw the pressure that mounted on him. Now he's for some of these things. Filibuster, much bigger deal than just one bill, though. So a long way off. And Rachel Scott, by the way, also the voice of our new mini series here on Start Here, Accountable. It's in the Start Here feed. You can check out the episode on voting rights from this past Saturday. Great work, Rachel. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Brad.
Now, if Congress is a place where everyone talks and nothing seems to change, the military is the opposite. Very little talk, but when there's action, it's really significant. And in the span of one statement last night from the Secretary of Defense, a policy that has shaped lives and prompted deep, deep arguments throughout the country changed. Like that. ABC's Louis Martinez covers the Pentagon. And Louis, this was all about how sexual assault allegations are handled within the military, right? What's new here?
That's right, Brad. This is a big deal. We're talking about Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin announcing that he supports removing the military chain of command from the prosecution of sexual assault cases and domestic violence cases.
We've been working at this for a long time in earnest, but we haven't gotten it right.
This is a stunning turnaround for the Pentagon. This is something that top military officials have long opposed when it's been proposed by members of the Hill.
We're going to do everything that in our power to get it right.
But now Secretary Austin says that he will work with Congress to ensure that these changes are made.
Hey, I mean, you've been covering this for a long time. Like, you've been kind of our point person in covering allegations of sexual assault in the military. What does this mean in terms of, like, some of the cases that you've seen?
Brad, what this is intended to do is to support sexual assault victims in the prosecution of cases.
My name is Samantha Jackson. In 2007, I was raped by my husband at that time, an Army soldier stationed at Fort Belvoir.
Typically, you have commanders who are involved in deciding whether a case should proceed onto a court-martial in sexual harassment cases, in sexual assault cases, in domestic violence cases.
In 2006, like so many times before, my ex-husband hit me. Only that time, I called military police. Unfortunately, the case went nowhere. My ex-husband was older when he joined the military, and he was close with his command.
Now the Pentagon is saying we will remove them and we will support the notion of putting independent officials who will work with prosecutors and take over the role currently being assumed by military commanders.
Former Army Specialist Georgina Butler says she was also assaulted by a soldier. And afterwards,
I still saw him every day. He worked right next door to the building I worked in.
Top Pentagon officials have always opposed this move because they said it would remove commanders from doing what they need to do, which is lead. They need to show that they're leaders. They need to show that they are the chain of command, that everything has to go through them. So they said they had said in the past that it would be a breakdown in good order and discipline. But as the scourge of sexual assault in the military continues over the last couple of years, top military officials have been open to the idea that anything needs to be done to prevent that.
Well, and you just said that they'd sort of been talking about this. They had expressed openness to it. Why now? Why was this, like, why was last night all of a sudden the moment here?
When Secretary Austin came into office back in January, he appointed an independent panel to look at the issue of sexual assault in the military. He gave them 90 days to come up with final recommendations. Those recommendations were presented to him on Monday. So just 24 hours later, you had Austin coming out saying that he was still reviewing the recommendations, but that he had seen enough to know that he would back these changes.
As we'll hear from our speakers today, we know far more now about the extent of the military sexual assault problem than we did a year ago. And it's clear that nothing has changed, despite the military's claim that things are getting better.
And momentum has been building in Congress for this proposal, which has long been championed by Senator Kirsten Gillibrand of New York. This notion of removing the military chain of command is the centerpiece of a legislation that she has introduced for years that has not garnered enough bipartisan support, but now has that support, including that of President Joe Biden. And she is scheduled to present that legislation once again for consideration by the Senate later this morning.
Yeah, she's been asking for new rules to be handed down to the military. Well, it sounds like the military is going to go ahead and make some changes regardless. Louis Martinez, really big change here, like you said. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Brad.
Next up on Start Here, talk about toxic. The family battle over Britney Spears' fortune heads back to court after the break. We all know there are things in life that you have to compromise on, but when it comes to your health, there should be no compromise. Don't go back to that one doctor. You know the type. Like, I've had this person before that doesn't actually listen to you or who seems just in a rush to end your appointment that you spent months making. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable, listen to you, and prioritize your health. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. You can search by location, availability, and insurance, so no compromises here, because with ZocDoc, you got more options than you know. We're talking about booking appointments with tens of thousands of top-rated, patient-reviewed, credible doctors and specialists. Go to ZocDoc.com/start here and download the ZocDoc app for free, then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc, ZocDoc.com/start here. ZocDoc.com/start here. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Have you ever wondered what you would do with an extra hour in your day? I think about this all the time. I'm like, I would be so productive. I'd exercise more, or I'd read a book, or I'd take a nap, like restore myself. We often find ourselves yearning for these extra hours, but the real question is, what would you do if you were making yourself a priority? Well, how about therapy? It can help you discover what's important so you can make the most of your time. If you've ever benefited from therapy, you know how transformative it can be. It's not just for those who have experienced major trauma. Therapy empowers you to learn positive coping skills, set boundaries, and become the best version of yourself. If you're considering starting therapy, should give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and tailored to your schedule. You just fill out a brief questionnaire. You'll be matched with a licensed therapist. And here's the beauty of it. You can switch therapists if you're not finding the right fit. No additional charge. Take the first step. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/start here today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/start here. Later today, we're expecting crowds to gather outside a Los Angeles courtroom in one of the most fiercely watched legal proceedings in the country. No, this is not a murder case. It's all about the finances of one of the world's biggest pop stars.
The conservatorship has got to go!
The battle over Britney Spears' conservatorship. Lawyers for her and her father, Jamie Spears, fighting over who controls her estate worth an estimated $60 million.
To hear members of the Free Britney movement, this is less a story of financial disputes than of a type of kidnapping playing out in public, where a successful, independent woman has control of her own life stripped away, and where those placed in charge of her well-being actually get paid to put her to work.
Britney Spears has been in an unjust conservatorship for 13 years.
Boom! In fact, yesterday, ahead of today's hearing, the New York Times announced it had obtained documents showing that Britney Spears had fought against this arrangement. But what is it exactly? ABC's Ashley Regal is based in LA. She's been covering this case up close. And Ashley, I mean, I guess I should just start by asking, what is a conservatorship? Like, what are we talking about?
Hey, Brad. Yeah, so for those who don't know, a conservatorship in U.S. law takes place via a judge. A judge makes an appointment of a manager of sorts to help an individual who can no longer manage their own finances.
There are laws that authorize the court to appoint a person or an entity to be a substitute decision maker for an adult with diminished capacity.
I love you. Thank you for meeting me.
Can you imagine?
Some of your listeners may be familiar with this term because recently it's been used in regards to Tom Girardi, the now disgraced former LA lawyer who's married to a Real Housewife of Beverly Hills.
I know you're traveling a lot, so thank you for letting me borrow the plane. I really appreciate it.
He's under a conservatorship. And in that case, it sort of makes sense. This is a guy who's in his 80s. They allege that he has Alzheimer's. So his brother has taken conservatorship over his affairs.
One more time.
In the case of Britney Spears, people would argue that it makes less sense that she's under a conservatorship.
Britney Spears has been a global star for decades now, but for the past 13 years, she's had no control over her own money.
This is a woman who is only 39 years old, and despite what mental health issues she clearly has suffered in the past, we don't know what she's suffering now. She's been highly productive and successful.
Britney Spears, one of the best-selling female musical artists of all time.
She had a Vegas residency that went on for more than 4 years. She performed in nearly 250 shows. And so for fans and people in the Free Britney movement, they say, how on earth does she need someone to oversee her finances when she's so incredibly successful and clearly able-bodied on her own?
Well, so how did this start then? If Britney Spears really has no control over her own finances, I mean, when did she lose control over them?
Yeah, so behind the scenes, this has been going on privately in the Spears family. But from what we saw in 2007 to 2008, Britney Spears went through a public meltdown.
Another hearing in the Spears Federline custody matter is scheduled for next month.
This is a grave situation for everybody.
She'd had a very public divorce. She lost custody of her two children.
Britney Spears came in and sat in my chair and said, I want to shave my hair off.
As you might remember, she was photographed in a barbershop, having shaved her head and seemed to have, you know, a very serious mental health break.
Why don't we wait a little bit? She said, no, I absolutely want it shaved off now.
Amid a media frenzy, the 26-year-old pop star was brought by ambulance to a Los Angeles hospital from her Beverly Hills home.
And what we understand is that people within her world got together and needed to protect her. They felt that they needed to help her so that her vast fortune didn't get squandered.
Jamie's attorneys say court documents show that when he stepped in as conservator in 2008, Britney's assets were only worth $2.8 million.
Recently, Jamie Spears, Britney's dad's lawyer, came out and has claimed that Britney was losing a ton of money behind the scenes.
Britney's assets were clearly being mismanaged, and she was being taken advantage of financially by some of those around her.
Her father's side has suggested that she still has ongoing mental health issues, that she is not fit to manage her own fortune. But over time, there's grown public concern about why exactly her dad is involved at all.
Well, so tell me about this relationship then, because it still seems kind of unclear whether Britney Spears is in fact okay with this, if she was ever okay with this. Because, you know, people around her father would say, listen, she's had the chance to petition to end this many times. She's never really done that in writing.
We don't know. I mean, it's a family affair. And, you know, what goes on behind closed doors, we may never know. His team says that they have a great loving relationship and that he is simply trying to protect his daughter and love her and that they've hung out in the pandemic and that things are good. Her team is saying, no, they're not.
In November, her attorney telling a judge, my client has informed me that she is afraid of her father, adding she will not perform again if her father is in charge of her career.
So what the New York Times report claims is that as long as several years ago, Britney Spears started communicating, making it clear to court-appointed investigators that this conservatorship with her father had too much control over her life. Of course, there are financial aspects of this arrangement. She gets an allowance dictating how much she can spend per month. But the allegations go far beyond that, suggesting that she was controlled in other ways. She wasn't allowed to drive her car. She wasn't allowed to make home repairs.
Since 2008, Britney has released four albums, starred on a primetime show.
I felt like I had a connection with you.
And even hosted her own Las Vegas residency.
One of the criticisms of this overall financial breakdown is that Britney and her fortune is what is paying not only for the conservatorship, not only for her legal bills, but also for her father's legal bills and his media strategy team.
Like, he gets a salary to be in charge of her money. The lawyers get in charge of a salary to argue over her money.
Correct.
Wow.
He has worked tirelessly to protect her. He has collaborated with her to help her regain custody of her children.
Britney's father, Jamie's team, has denied any sort of wrongdoing. They continue to say that he only cares for her well-being and is looking out for his daughter.
I understand that every story needs a villain, but people have it so wrong here.
Britney Spears' battle to have her father removed as the conservator of her estate. The pop star's lawyers taking a court as the Free Britney movement gained some steam.
And originally, her dad was in charge of basically all of this, right? The contracts, the cabinet painting, what visitors she was allowed to have over. At this moment now, he's only in charge of the finances, right? But she's essentially trying to get rid of him in that capacity too, right? What's she going to say?
We haven't heard yet from Britney in court, which is why the hearing taking place later today is so highly anticipated. People are dying to hear what she has to say.
I just hope Britney feels the support that we all are sending, all the love and support.
Britney has not spoken publicly. We've really only heard in the last couple of years and largely in response to the Hulu FX New York Times documentary framing Britney Spears. Little tiny things here and there on social media, mainly Instagram.
Am I ready to take the stage again? Am I going to take the stage again? Will I ever take the stage again? I have no idea.
Trying to assure her fans that she's okay, that she's happy, that she's healthy, that she's just taking a time out.
I'm totally fine. I'm extremely happy. I have a beautiful home, beautiful children.
When I was in court earlier this year, it was her team and his team, and it was a bit combative. You know, his team, her father's, says one thing, that things are good, and her team pushes back saying that's not how she feels. But we haven't yet heard from Britney Jean Spears, and people are on pins and needles waiting to hear what she does, in fact, say later today. In 2015, I attended her Vegas residency called Piece of Me. It was a very popular show that went on for 4 years. And I gotta tell you, to see her on stage, she's a fierce dancer. She has all these incredible costumes and musical performances. You think, how can this be the same person? Because here she is selling out shows night after night, And yet her dad is in control of her finances. It's a strange irony for such a strong female pop star.
Right, like one narrative out of that could be, wow, this conservatorship really worked. She really got back on her feet. Look how well this worked out. Other people would say, no, she's done that despite these shackles that were put on her, and she still doesn't have control over any of this money that she's actually earned for herself. Ashley Rigel, really interesting stuff. Know you'll be following this today. Thank you.
Thank you, Brad.
We're going to take one more quick break. When we come back, it's a wonder of the world. So why would it get crossed off our preservation lists? One last thing is next.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
And one last thing. The Great Barrier Reef is one of the world's amazing natural treasures. In recent years, it's been more and more imperiled by climate change, so much so that the United Nations is now on the verge of declaring it in danger, to which Australia is saying, how dare you?
We made very clear our strong disappointment, even our bewilderment, that our officials have been blindsided in the way that they have.
What would usually be pretty boring diplomatic language about conservation has now become an international jousting match. See, the UN has a list of famous World Heritage Sites. There are man-made things on the list, like the Taj Mahal. Then there are natural wonders, like the Grand Canyon and the Great Barrier Reef. But the UN is saying because the famous reef is deteriorating in front of our eyes, it may move it to its endangered list. And as a threat to clean it up faster, could remove its special status altogether. Australia brings in millions and millions of dollars a year in reef tourism, scuba trips. Well, if you're no longer considered one of the most special sites in the world, and all these eco-tourists are convinced you're not actually doing the eco-work of keeping the place beautiful, are they going to stop coming?
This is a complete subversion of normal process.
So Australia is challenging these findings. They say they've done a ton of work limiting the destruction. They say the UN sprung this on them after specifically assuring them they wouldn't. Some are even convinced that China, which is leading this debate, is intentionally trying to sabotage their neighbors.
And we are here to challenge the decision when it comes up for final consideration in the World Heritage Committee in about the third week of July.
But none of that changes the fact that the Great Barrier Reef has now lost half of its coral population over the last few decades. That's not something a few less boats or reef-safe sunscreen is going to fix. This is why I was talking to someone who lived in an old building once, and the city was going to designate it as an historic landmark, which sounds cool to me, but this person's like, no, please do not give me some title that's going to make me deal with red tape for the rest of my life. Everyone was on board except the owner. Start here tomorrow. Just hit subscribe. More on all these stories at abcnews.com or the ABC News app. I'm Brad Milkey. See you tomorrow.
The first ever criminal trial of a former president is underway in Manhattan. It's one of potentially four trials facing former President Trump as he makes his third bid for the White House. What do voters think about his culpability, and would a guilty verdict make a difference in the election? I'm Galen Druk, and every Monday and Thursday on the 538 Politics podcast, we break down the latest news from the campaign trail. We sort through the noise and zoom in on what really matters, using data and research as we go. That's 538 Politics every Monday and Thursday, wherever you get your podcasts.